this memory stick so that you can move all information to this memory stick, small stick, and then you plug it into projector, and without a laptop it shows presentation without a laptop. Right. I've never met him. He's, if it, he's Perkus, he's famous, but I've never met him.
Hi, Seb.
Morning.
Morning, Seb. Something like that. I should talk to her.
I'm Thomas Habermann from the University of Cologne in Germany, and I'm working on random systems and in general on statistical mechanics.
As a consumer. I'm your speaker today. Eugene Shaknovich from Harvard. I work on protein folding, statistical mechanics of polymers, disordered systems, drug design, various other things. Okay, so I will. May I start? I'm sorry. Go. Okay, so today I will tell you some few things about the work that has been going on in protein folding for a number of years. Of course, I will mostly discuss the work that is done in my lab, though the stuff that I will be discussing should be viewed in a broader perspective of much more concerted effort by many people, and I will mention some names as we proceed. And talk, I will start from really kind of introduction, and I will try to be as brief as possible on theoretical approaches to protein folding, because it's relatively old stuff, though I will just introduce one new work which is relatively recent, but overall it should be viewed more like an introduction. And again, I will just briefly outline what people were doing in replicas, kind of analytical theory in heteropolymers, really briefly, because I know that you had this kind of introduction, so I will mention one relatively recent work on designed protein-like polymers and phase diagram, but will be brief. Then I will talk a little bit about lattice models, again, very briefly, because you had a couple of talks, and this is relatively old stuff. And then I will come to a newer things that are going on in the lab now, and some of them are really fresh and unpublished. And I will discuss two ways to model much more detailed, to do much more detailed analysis of proteins, including more or less realistic structural details and trying to understand folding at kind of pretty atomic level of detail. And one aspect of it is discrete molecular dynamic simulations of intermediate of lattice coarse grain model that allows to really observe transition states, and I think that that gives some perspective. And also, if time permits, I will talk about a lot of Monte Carlo simulations that allow to have some insight onto very microscopic details of energy landscape for a small protein at atomic level of resolution. So that's what I would like to talk about today. And so let me first of all just start from the end, in a sense, just to list the insights which came from about a decade of studies of proteins in terms of simplified models. Of course, for physicists, it's very natural to see this kind of models that I will show in this first part of the talk. For a chemist, it brought them close to heart attack when they saw something like a ball on a string, whatever, and then somebody claimed that this is a protein and something on the lattice, and there were claims. There was, of course, an extremely kind of bewildered reaction from chemistry and biochemistry community, but still kind of we had a nice community of people who believe that this can be useful, and sometimes with some disagreements, but nevertheless, things worked well. And so things, kind of a number of really important things emerged from this analysis, as I said, over about 10 years. And they are both kind of, it's more or less concerted effort of analytical theories and as well as simplified model simulations. And paradigm here are lattice models, which I will briefly tackle. And the first attempt was to look at random sequences and to see what kind of results can one get from very naive and of course, very simple-minded assumption that protein sequences are random, and try to see what kind of statistical mechanics emerges from this analysis. And it turns out that it was not exactly the right statistical mechanics, in the sense that some properties that were predicted from random sequences were not really protein-like. And to this end, there was a step forward in thinking about proteins in these terms, in terms of analytical models. And there was some kind of view that actually real proteins should be somehow have special selected sequences that will help to solve some important problems that are not solvable at the level of random sequences, such as cooperativity, which is not properly exhibited by random sequences and properly exhibited by real proteins in experimental test tube, and one had to have a model that would be cooperative enough so that one can really kind of at least claim that what you do has some relation to reality, and design protein-like sequences really delivered this property. Then there was some kind of a connection between thermodynamics and kinetics, again on a very rough terms of this word. It was not exactly, and it was not exact correlation with a number of various caveats, but still there was a parameter that is energy gap that relates the properties of the spectrum of states in equilibrium, or kind of the density of states for a protein model, to its kinetic behavior, to its ability to find its ground state in a limited number of, say, steps or limited number of time steps. And this emerged, this energy gap, in a number of mostly simulations as a predictor of folding kinetics. And from that emerged some concept of, again, limited, but still some concept of universality of folding kinetics, so that independent of a particular Hamiltonian that is used for the analysis, there is one macroscopic feature of this Hamiltonian that allows to predict to some extent folding kinetics, folding rate, and so on. And that, of course, happens in lattice model. And also within the framework of kinetic studies of lattice models, there was, again, some, and some off lattice models, there was some effort to identify the transition states, what happens at the top of the barrier between unfolded and folded state. And naturally, from this analogy with cooperativity, first order phase transition, the idea of nucleation emerged, and folding nuclei as a property of transition state ensemble were identified. Frankly, I was not going to discuss about energy gap, because I thought that this is kind of a I will talk a little bit about it. I will show a couple of results about. Oh, absolutely. No, I would agree with that completely. You can figure out some model where you artificially pull down a state which is unrelated to the rest of the states, and it will give you zero help. I would absolutely agree with that. I guess the point that I'm making, that in a realistic Hamiltonian, that a Hamiltonian that you can write as a continuous function of its variable and in terms of microscopic variable, so you take lattice model, I will show the Hamiltonians that I mean, that for those Hamiltonians, at least as follows from simulations and some. Yeah, but you can write even simpler kind of contact to body Hamiltonian, and it will be okay. So I mean, Hamiltonian not on the terms of phenomenological model, but in terms of microscopic model. I guess the point that I'm making is that you start from microscopic model where you have a sequence and the rules of the game, so that how they interact, how monomers interact when they come close to each other, and so on, so on. From this Hamiltonian, on this class of Hamiltonians, this relation between energy gap and kinetics, I view it at least at the level of lattice models and simulations, and here I'm talking about simple models. I view it as established. Though, of course, you can find the counterexample, but you have to, I would be convinced in this counterexample if you do it kind of manifest in microscopic model rather than in phenomenological model. Rather than writing a landscape, you write that kind of a set of interactions, and then from that. Okay. So if there are no more concerns.
I also don't know what this is coming from. I'm wondering about the mixture of point 3 and point 4. Remember, it seems like point 3 is sort of talking about the energy gap, which is
right.
Dependent of the topology and all those things.
Right.
The point of the agent seems to be a very topology dependent object.
Sure.
So the question is whether the universality of the energy gap, whether that's in contrast to the
Yes, if you wish, yes. The point is that if you have a given topology and deliver a sequence with a large energy gap for this topology, and you can estimate energy gap for the topology, you know everything, then for this large energy gap, this sequence will fold fast into this topology. By fast, I mean in algebraic way, in non-exponential, but in algebraic scaling within. I will comment on it. But when you go from topology to topology, folding rates of course will change for the same gap. So basically, that for a given sequence for a set of sequences that fold to the same structure, the gap is a good predictor of folding rate. That's what I'm saying here. And so this is kind of a continuation of this point. I will comment on that, and that allowed to do some kind of a much more generic models rather than models of interactions. And in some cases, it was discovered, though not all, that when you think about the location of this nucleus and properties of this nucleation phenomena, then basically the topology, the certain characteristics of the ground state, of the native state, play really dominant role in determining the location of the folding nucleus, and I will comment on it later in much greater detail. So this is a real kind of overview. You may disagree with some of those points, but this is okay. So just let me briefly again overview some approaches to do analytical study of thermodynamics of random and non-random systems. And so this is a basic Hamiltonian. I think that Henri in his presentation gave some somewhat probably similar model, and this is a very basic Hamiltonian that tells us that if you have monomers I and j, which was positions along the sequence I and j that come in some contact with each other, that is determined by the scale of their interaction, their contribution to total energy of interaction, and this bij, which depends on identity of monomer I and j and the distance between them, and you sum up all pairwise contributions here. So this is a pretty standard Hamiltonian that relates energy with to a configuration, to a current configuration of a polymer, which is a set of Ris and Rjs. And a simple model of disorder here is the simplest possible model of disorder, and non-trivial is that you can view this Bij as a two-letter code so that you can establish some rules of the game so that if two monomers are of the same type, they attract each other. For example, if they're of different types, they repel each other, and there are some variations of this which can be looked at. No, it's a non-separable. It's non-separable. It's incompatibility model. Absolutely. Yeah. So now another point which is really very very important here, that we are talking not about random sequences, but we are talking about sequences that feature this gap. And I guess the point that I want to make is that the sequences that have this gap, this special set of sequences that are specifically designed with a gap for their native state, their thermodynamics is quite different from thermodynamics of random sequences, and that's the major message from this kind of analytical approach. And what you do is then you set up a native state, and you say that the native state is characterized by the set of coordinates Ri0 with superscript 0. So that you are saying that you are looking at some native state, and you are saying that you are interested only in sequences that have large enough energy gap with this in this native state. So you are looking only at subset of all possible sequences. And then one can view this in a various ways. You can restrict when you do average, I will show in the next slide, when you do averaging over sequences, you restrict your averaging only to the space of proper sequences, not over all sequences, but you average the proper quantity over only over special sequences. And when you do this averaging, you can make some assumption, which is in fact kind of looking at statistical mechanics and sequence spaces, analog between microcanonical and canonical ensemble in a sense, and you may say that the sequences that appear, the sequences that appear in the sequence soup, they appear with probability that depends on how well they feed the ground state, and exactly by changing this temperature in this probability rule, by decreasing this temperature, you bias the probability towards well-designed sequences. Increasing this temperature, you bias the probability towards random sequences. So the point is that now when you look at this statistical mechanics, you are looking at statistical mechanics in the space of non-random sequences, but rather the sequences that are biased towards proper quantities. And then that means that when you calculate the average free energy, and that's what kind of rules prescribe us to do in this case, you have to average free energy over sequences, and that's the proper quantity to work with, and this is self-averaging. You do the usual averaging of logarithm of partition function, which is the normal prescription, but now you average this logarithm of partition function with probability of appearance of proper sequences, of right sequences, not usual random averaging when you sum over all sequences and divide by 2 to the power of n, which is the total number of sequences, but you bias this averaging towards proper sequences. Yeah, but for a fixed, at this point for a fixed target structure, but then you can average over target structures. Then the next point you average over target structures. You first, you do probability measure for target structures, which, you assume that they appear with a probability like in a collapsed homopolymer. So you do measure which is proportional to this G, you penalize the target structures that violate the connectivity condition, And you put them with some probability that corresponds to the probability of appearance of a target structure in a collapsed state. What? Which P? Which P? This one? No. I have for P I have an expression only, and I'm not claiming that I know this P. That will appear in the next slide. How this P is here. Why? No. Why? I do not ignore that. Right. With low energy, right? And was of course was no. Of course, I forgot to mention one thing. Of course, I impose the condition of constant composition here, which is in a ferromagnetic analogy, it's a condition of a fixed magnetic moment here, which is not, because now what I have to penalize, indeed this gap issue is important, I have to fight against homopolymeric sequences which fold with very low energy but have no gap. But first of all, these sequences appear with exponentially small probability, and second, which is more important, I impose the condition of constant composition, which is a condition of of fixed magnetization. Yeah, of course. You mean in the bottom of the spectrum? Oh yes, of course I can, because it's a non-self-averaging quantity. Of course I cannot look at it in this. Yeah, of course, it's a gap between the native state and the middle of the and the, which is proportional to the gap between the native state and EC, the boundary of continuous spectrum. But what goes on below the boundary of continuous spectrum, I really cannot enforce this condition in analytical theory. I can do it in simulation, in later simulation, but I cannot do it here. But I know that from here, I will see that this average gap has something to do with the Taylor distribution that will come as a result. So at this point, all what I do is the following. I want to do averaging over special sequences, and these special sequences I selected to have a constant amino acid composition, say 50-50, 50A and 50B, and have low enough energy in the ground state. That's all what I want to do. What will happen, I do not know. We'll see what will happen from what will emerge. But at this point, I'm not assuming anything except the requirement that I want to have energy sequences with low energy.
What do you try to achieve with this?
I want to build a phase diagram for the system, which will show me where, at which conditions I will have the native state, at which conditions I will have unfolded state, at which condition folded state, and what kind of transitions between them I will see, whether it will be first order transition, second order transition, will I have cooperative folding behavior, and so on. My main goal here is to see whether this selection of sequences will explain or will not explain cooperativity of folding, whether thermodynamics will or will not be cooperative. That's where I'm heading to. No, but I'm not. I showed it. Let me show the previous slide to you. This is the P. This is P. So basically, this is the Boltzmann distribution in sequence space, with weight corresponding to energies of the fit. Of sequences into the native structure, and so I overweight sequences that fold to the native structure with lower energy, and underweight the ones that fold to the high energy. I can equally well I could write for P here, but it simply it's exactly the same as to write for P the delta function of energy minus some E0, but it's exactly the same. So basically what I'm saying, that P is the probability in sequence design, the probability to find the sequence with a given energy, which is exactly the same as imposing the strict microcanonical restriction on energies allowed. It's exactly the same, because then you can... Oh yeah, I have to assume that I'm looking at, exactly, of course, I'm looking at some folded structure, and I'm looking at statistical mechanics of sequences that fold into this structure with low energy. That's the question I'm asking.
So you select by energy,
yeah.
I select by energy
under the condition of constant composition. Yeah. I impose the condition of constant magnetization, zero.
You are doing, but
yeah. Because that's what I do in sequence design on the lattice. That's what I do. I select them by energy by fixing aminoacid composition the same, and I know that gives me gap. Yeah, I know that it will result in sequences with gap because of the REM properties of in 3D.
Do you include some sequences which hold another state?
No, of course I do not. But as I go to lower energies, the likelihood of a sequence to fold I actually sum over all states here. So if the guy falls to another state, it will come to with a higher Boltzmann weight than in the ground state. So basically, that's what it's automatically summation over all configurations. So that's where the story is. So basically, what we need to do is to calculate this average partition function z to the n using replicas, and this calculation of course requires integration over all variables, and that integration over all variables will include all states, including the ones which are lower in energy than the ground state, if such states exist. Yeah, absolutely. So basically, again, I don't want to go into a lot of calculational details here, but the idea is that when you look at this Hamiltonian and then put this P of sigma I here in its form that I presented before, the problem becomes the problem like in spin glass or so, but n plus one replicas. N replicas for randomness and one replica is a leading replica for the native state. So it's kind of, again, it's a little bit different story because averaging is with non-random distribution, but it's okay. So it can be looked at, and the same technique as before, so you can look at replica symmetry breaking solutions, and the replica symmetry breaking solution is one step RSB, so I will not tell about this in great detail. I just will present the phase diagram. Yes? Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Sure, go ahead.
So this interaction, you have a AB.
Right.
This could be quite different from
Not really, because you can shift it by linear terms. Because the most general two-letter interaction is A plus B sigma I plus sigma J plus C sigma I sigma J. So this is the most general interaction
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, it will separate. Yeah, it will separate, of course. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it will separate into core. Sure. Yeah, yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Of course, but you will have then separation into core in the outside, or in the very long chain, you will have separation, microphase separation into microdomains of H, P, H, P, H, P, this kind of stuff. I guess what I'm saying, and that we can discuss it in great details. I will show you how this is done. What I'm saying is that my claims, the phase diagram does not depend on this H, on how you distribute this interaction. So that basically for the phase diagram, if you have this mixing term, sigma I multiplied by sigma j, then basically the phase diagram would not depend on particular choice of interactions here. So for a wide for a large class of Hamiltonians, the phase diagram would not. Yeah, that came out of analyzing this model. Yes. No. I mean the structures. Of course, what I'm saying. Of course, I'm not saying that the structure is the same. Of course, structure for this model with B zero with this kind of the linear term zero, the ground state structures would be totally different. And I'm not saying that I'm from this model because I'm averaging over all structures. I'm not saying that I'm predicting the structure from this model. In any case, I will never predict the structure from a two-letter model. But let me finish. But what I'm saying is that the phase diagram, basically the areas where you have stable native state, stable non-native state, and transitions between them does not depend on the character of the Hamiltonian for a broad range of Hamiltonians. No, you can for both cases you can easily design structures. I mean you take this and you do Monte Carlo, it will converge perfectly well to low states. Of course you do it with this kind of Monte Carlo approach in sequence space, not by drawing structures, but I can assure you in both cases you can easily design low energy structures. It's very easy. Yeah, C is zero, then it will be exactly. C is zero, then the results will be totally different. What I'm saying is that for any Hamiltonian that has C non-zero, the sigma I, sigma j term non-zero, the results are like that. But thanks, Chao, it's exactly right. When you have the linear, only linear term, which is indeed pure HP, the results will not be like that. You will not have this phase diagram for this case, exactly. Right. No, the phase diagram will shift strongly here, and you will have these transitions only at very, very low temperature. So as C goes to zero, the transition temperature will go to zero as well. I mean, there is no this transition for C equals to zero. That's why, of course, you can do perturbation, but then you will rescale the transition temperature, and you will see the same effect here.
But in that case, the structure is much harder to design. You can't make an actual structure.
In which case? No, why? Why? You can. No. I mean, again, we are talking about different gaps here. What you are talking about is this gaps in terms of that you have not single structure in the ground level, but 100, 200, whatever. Of course, this kind of theory, the replica calculation, would not see that. It will not distinguish between one structure in the ground state and 100 structures in the ground state. It will distinguish between one or 100 structures in the ground state and exponentially large in n number of the ground states. And in this case, in your terms, all your sequences are equally designable for the purpose of this theory, because it simply tells us that the number of ground states is not exponentially growing with n. The scaling changes because it's analytical calculation with replicas. Yeah, sure. One sec, yeah. Yeah, so I really thought that it's kind of an introduction. But anyway, so this is a selective temperature and this is temperature. By selective temperature means that as you go along this axis down, the sequences become more and more designed, more and more selected for low energy in the ground state. This is the normal temperature at which we're seeing. And so basically this is the set of conditions at which native globule dominates. This is the set of conditions that high temperature is like random. It's like random heteropolymer. High selective temperature means that we are going to random heteropolymer. And at this set of conditions, it collapses, but to a random state, not to the ground state. It's not sufficiently selected, so the gap is not sufficient here. Here it is disordered globule where it does not have any ground state structure. Here the number of ground states is exponentially growing with n, and this is simply a coil state, and there is the region where fluctuations are strong, where mean field breaks down. So that as you go from here to here, as you go from design to random heteropolymer, you have this kind of pot-like transition, which is first between first order and second order. But the folding transition, which is here, it is a strong first order transition, unlike random heteropolymer case when it is the kind of second order like transition. So that was the goal of this analysis, to get this phase diagram and to claim that there is a line of first order transitions that lead to the native state here. Right here, this this one. This one is not the first order transition. Yeah, this one is second order, and this one is first order. This gray is also second order with these features of first order. It's pod select transition, like in the RAM transition. Yeah.
What do you mean by field?
Yeah. This is what you do is just your usual analysis. You switch to overlap parameters Q alpha beta here, and you do mean field in Q alpha beta. You minimize the Hamiltonian with respect to. There are two other parameters emerge. One other parameter is this replica overlap, Q alpha beta. It's two sets of replica overlaps between pairs of replicas and between current replica and the ground state. There are two sets of overlaps, Q alpha beta. And another other parameter is a microphase separation other parameter between black and white. And this is psi other parameter. So what you do, let me finish. What you do mean field in Q alpha beta, like in Parisian sets. And here one loop approximation in psi 4. In psi, in the microphase separation of the parameter. So it's in the same sense mean field as Parisian sets, exactly in the same sense. Yeah, no. With connectivity, I calculate the entropy. I consider connectivity explicitly. I calculate entropy of the chain that have a given Q alpha beta. Which takes into account connectivity. It is equivalent to n plus one boson problem, a quantum problem with n plus one bosons. You can do that. It's published more or less. That's why kind of I'm going sketchy over that. It's very technical. I can show. What? No, it's not. It is a variational ansatz on the scale of the order parameter. Yeah, it has one variational parameter, but it's not a full variational ansatz in Q alpha beta. It's not complete variational ansatz. It's only on the scale of Q alpha beta or the parameter variational ones. I mean those numbers are 0.5, 1, 1.5, whatever. That doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. The meaning of this is compared to one. To one is the parameter C. This separation parameter C. But the physical meaning of the vertical axis. That's what you're asking. No, this selective, yeah, is vertical one, yeah. TS is a vertical one, T selective, yeah.
Right.
And horizontal is normal temperature.
Okay, so the sentence in the bottom says the higher TS, the more
the sequence, yeah, and the lower the freezing temperature, yeah. Yeah, and that's right here. Yeah, that's that line. And high TS means that at high TS we do not impose restrictions on selection. And that means that at TS going to infinity, the probability of each sequence equals to exactly 1 over 2 to the n. And this limit is a limit of random heteropolymer here. Yeah, the standard folding is this line. Zero because at low temperatures, and that's exactly the effect, it develops very long correlations and it becomes more and more homopolymer like at low selective temperatures, and that's why it gets like in a homopolymer the transition temperature goes to zero. It's a long range correlation in sequences that are developed. No, but of course, even with constant composition, you have one half A and one half B. Macroscopically, you still have very long correlation. A, one half sequence of A and one half of sequence of B. Of course, you impose it globally, not locally.
Uh-huh. But right now, what you're doing is ideally, you'd want this to optimize delta, which you can.
Sure.
But in this case, where you get the set foundation of the polymer, that corresponds to a situation in your approximation of delta, not in delta itself, because obviously delta is
Yeah. That's right. And in this case, that means that actual delta, that it catches some properties of actual delta because it goes, the freezing transition goes to zero. So it catches the properties, the fact that spectrum shrinks as you go to homopolymer, everything goes down and the delta decreases as well. So not only the energy of the native state decreases, but the energy of the all misfolds decreases and decoys, whatever you call them. And therefore everything shrinks, delta gap goes down, and you are returning to a homopolymer situation at low temperature.
over-design tolerance.
Yeah, it is in a sense. But given these rules of the game, given only two letters and all that, so you have to take it with some grain of salt, because I don't believe that two letters are a good example. I really, really kind of reveal all these issues with design, but anyway. Top line, you mean influence of high order? You mean on the phase diagram or? I think, of course I can. It's kind of a technical thing, the technical issues. But you should concentrate on phase diagram. Just ignore the rest, because it's a very technical thing which I really want to omit, because I have a lot of other things to talk about which will be much less technical, and I really want to go forward. If you want, I can spend some time discussing how this calculation is done. Okay, fine. Include psi 4 term in field Hamiltonian by including next order in development. Consider psi 4 term as perturbation. New equation for the transition temperature Tc between disordered globule and frozen globule can be solved for small interaction kappa, which is kappa is same as C. A new phase diagram that includes psi 4 term and one loop approximation in Q alpha beta. This is this one. The higher Ts, the more disordered the sequence and the lower freezing temperature. But as I said, I really want you to look at the phase diagram. I don't want to spend time in talking about technical. On what? On B? No, it should not. We did not do that, but I think the phase diagram should not depend on B. Because B is integrated over, it gives a constant term. This B stuff gives a constant term under the condition of constant density. If you impose the constant density, which is assumption here, of course, the total density is constant. And in each state, because it's mean field, the total density is constant for in each phase. So now let me move to the related subject, and it's kind of a little bit less sophisticated maybe, and the other step in this development would be to try to look at the issues from a computational point of view, from numerics, and the counterpart of analytical, very kind of rough and rough more analytical models here are lattice models, which take into account, again, only very, very coarse-grained features of a protein. And now I switch completely from two-letter representation to 20-letter representation. Now I have 20 types of monomers, 20 types of beads, and they are shown by different colors here. And again, this stuff is more or less old. That's why I'm just simply kind of overviewing it. This is a good model for protein folding, because it contains the major kind of solves the major mystery in a sense, because it really one can show, and I will show a couple of slides, that you can, using this kind of toy model, you can solve the major problem that protein folding faces, that all information about 3D structure is encoded in its 1D order in sequence, and in this case it is the order of beads on the string, or the order of colors of beads on the string. And then this 1D order, after some simulation and after some kind of careful design of sequences, can transform into 3D order, which is arrangement of this system on the in three-dimensional space. And this is a pretty stable state, so that it can stay there for quite a while with some small fluctuations. And in this sense, it solves this what was termed as Leventhal paradox, that you have many, many possibilities to arrange this chain. Here is an example of 48 mirror, and it will end up in the native state. So this is a good model, and I have, of course, to provide some justification that this kind of scenario can work. And so there was a first step in this direction, which was useful, is to look at the small lattices, and this is a 27 mirror, which many people know in this audience. And the idea with 27 mirror was that the total number of conformations here is very small, compact, unrelated by symmetry, about 100,000. So you can enumerate them all. You can get partition function exactly for any sequence that you want. And then you can evaluate whatever quantity you want and compare, for example, with predictions of analytical theory. And the fact that it can be that all conformations can be enumerated is absolutely crucial for that, because the properties of this at low temperature, the properties of heteropolymers are dominated by their ground states, and therefore in many cases simulations short of enumeration that miss the ground state of the spectrum can completely miss physics, and therefore one has to be really sure that he or she did not miss the ground states. And that was good about this 27-hour model, because you can be really sure that you enumerated everything. And the next thing which can be done with lattice models is that if you want to go further from 27 mers to larger lattice models, you will not be able to do full enumeration. This is, for example, 48 mer, and with 48 mer, the number of compact conformations is about 10 billion. It's too difficult to work with. And the idea here is to now work with sequences, but not with any random sequence, because for 48 mer, as I said, you cannot enumerate, and therefore you are on a shaky ground with random sequences. You are not sure whether you sampled properly all the states, but to work with sequences that deliver this large gap, with the idea, with a kind of hope, not maybe idea, but with the hope that indeed, as I advertised before, this large gap business solves the problem, so that kinetic problem will be solved by, guaranteed by the large gap. And again, as I said, it's a conjecture, it's a hope, it's not a proof here, but that's kind of the typical scenario and typical scheme of the experiment here, the computational experiment. And the idea is really, really very simple. So you again start from your ground state, from the native state. You pick up some random conformation here for compact 48 mer, and you say, well, okay, I want this to be my native state. Then the second question will be, which sequence would you like to find? Which sequence would you find for which this structure will be a native state? What kind of sequences will fold into this native state? And then the way how one can approach it is to carry out the design, and meaning that you start coloring here again, kind of in my language, coloring means amino acid types, and you have 20 colors, 20 types of amino acids, and this coloring is done kind of like, there are many approaches to this problem now, but originally what we did was the Monte Carlo in sequence space, again under the condition of constant composition. So the number of bits of each color is fixed, and what you do, you are reshuffling them under the condition that you accept only the swaps, that low energy of this sequence in the given ground state, with the hope that it will work. Of course, there is no guarantee, but the hope that this kind of approach, simple-minded approach, will work. And so after a few millions of this reshuffling, the sequences emerge that have really low energy in the ground state, much lower than what you expect from a random sequence, and so on. And then the next step is to check whether this works or does not work. And to do it, you just freeze one of the sequences, one of the million. And I emphasize that millions of sequences emerge like that. It's not one sequence that solves this problem. There are many, many sequences that have equally well designed, that are equally well designed for the ground state. So there is a huge space of solutions for this problem. And so you then pick up one sequence, and you say that this is my native sequence for this hopefully, presumably native structure. Then you start folding simulation. In this case, it's a simple Monte Carlo on the lattice from completely unfolded state. So you generate a random walk on the lattice for this 48 mer. Of course, as I said, I emphasized it many times. I do not know that there will be a big gap. Then I will check it from simulation. Is low energy. Yeah, I'm not saying anything about gap at this point. I would a posteriori I would check this the gap, but only a posteriori. No, I do not know that. I know nothing. I mean, I said that's kind of the rule of the game that I want to play by. And the answers to this question come a posteriori, after, not before. That's the kind of the symbol of hope, not any statement, symbol of hope. Of course, all these questions can be asked. So, but the point is that then you unfold your protein, you start from completely random state, and you run Monte Carlo now in conformational space. You start to move the chain in normal Monte Carlo way, and then now at this point, this what you hoped for becomes true, indeed. And these sequences, and this was repeated many, many, many times for various structures and so on the lattices. Though of lattice problem is more complicated, I will comment about of lattice aspects of it. But on the lattice, this works fine. And this is a typical folding simulation here that results in complete recovery of this structure. And energy-wise, it results in energies in the native state, and it never goes below. You can, again, you cannot prove that there does not exist structures with low energy lower, but you never see them in simulation. You can run them for days and days, and this was actually done, and you never see those structures in simulation for this kind of scenario for design. For this particular is 20 letter Mizell Jernigan. That's from table 6, basically. But we used another one, Skolnik also. So it's more or less generic 20 by 20 matrix. Because for any 20 by 20 matrix, you can design sequence here. Sequence depends on the potential that you're using. This specifically we use Mizell Jernigan in this particular run. So which means that actually this seems to be working, this design, and that gives a reasonable model for folding of these simple lattices. And
this relation can go back.
Sure.
So the Mizell Jernigan matrix table 6 is sort of similar.
No, table 6 is not similar. No, table 5 is similar. Table 6, they subtract water. It's much more distributed. It's not two letter like.
Right, so
it is not two letter like. It's smaller than polar. Yeah, and Skolnik's potentials are also okay in this regard. It's pretty distributed. When you do it's a good point, by the way. When you do potentials that are very skewed towards two letter coded, this method doesn't work. You have to have 20 letter potential that is well distributed in the space of eigenvalues or whatever. This trick with two letter sequences would not work. You need 20 letters for that. No. It's absolutely a matter of how many letters you have with whatever potential in this lattice. Basically, you can show that you need to have the number of letters greater than the number of conformations per chain, because basically you are fighting in sequence space. You are fighting against configurational space. You have two spectra in a sense: one in sequence space and one in configurational space. You have to have more letters per. More letters than conformations per monomer. Again, we can discuss it, and I published this result, so there is something. But I assure you, if you want, you can kind of play with this game yourself. But if you have two, we tried it with all various potentials. If you try only two types of letters, it will not work for long lattices. It will work for 27 mer, but for 48 mer, for 64 mer, 100 mer, it doesn't work. It never falls. Can you show that for long chain, for 48 mer or for 64 mer? For 27 mer, it will work for many. Yeah, but for long ones. For 36, we also folded. But for 48, 64, because our problem, the problem which we really had started from 64. And when 64, it did not work in two letters with various potentials. But when we switched to 20 letters, it worked eventually for any structure that we use. So 20 was absolutely crucial for every structure that we encountered, which is, of course, much less than all structures. But for every structure, we have never seen exceptions from this rule that in 20 letters, for every structure, you can design and fold easily in 20 letters. Yes, Terry?
For a given sequence map, if you have enough of the course, you can design it if you want.
Sure. Well, 20 letters work for we did for chain lengths up to 150, and 20 letters work for all chain lengths. That's what I know in response to your question. For chain lengths up to 150, 20 letters work fine. I do not know what happens with longer sequences. I don't think that it will break down it because the relation is not between lengths, but relation is between the flexibility, the number of conformations per monomer, because the number in sequence space grows exponentially and in conformational space grows exponentially. And what kills what is the question. So it's a matter, the problem is with flexibility of the chain. That's why it works for lattice model. And it would not work for off lattice model in many cases. For which calculation? Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. For analytic, yes, of course. Yes, yes. But rigid chain, excuse me, Richard, 1 second, I will. In analytic calculation, we impose the condition of rigidity because there is a parameter gamma, the number of states per monomer. And if this parameter exceeds the critical parameter, the chain becomes flexible in analytical calculation. All this diagram breaks down. There is a criterion on the flexibility of the chain. There is a parameter that governs this behavior. So for two letters, you have to have rigid chain in order for this diagram to work. No, it does not scale with size. No, it doesn't.
It would seem that you expect a breakdown in terms of the model where you had a number of different amino acids for the order of the number of contacts that you formed, which would be what, hundreds?
No, but here already 57. 48 mer has 57 contacts.
Oh, well, we need any structure, but I think the contacts, which is much larger. Including
ones that are not formed. No, not why possible. In any physically possible contacts, they cannot be more than 57. Because in any conformation, you can't have more than in maximally compact conformation contacts, which is 57.
Right, but I'm saying if you were doing a list of all the possible contacts that could be.
Yeah, but they are not realized. I mean, they are not realizable simultaneously because
right,
of topological constraints.
Right. That's the number where you start getting the overall when you had a number of real actors that were on that scale. I just have one question about the Amazon area. There's one topology that
you're about
ending, which is the
cysteine. Cysteine, we took 0 for cysteine. So, I mean, you should not take literally the names of the, I mean, it's lattice model, has nothing to do with real amino acids, of course, here. Whatever you call the letter KD has nothing to do with lysine, whatever. Okay, so now let me just complete this part about lattice model. And the point, I guess, which I want to make is that the question is how does this gap design, does it help really in kinetics or not, and what? How can we address the influence of gap on kinetics? And I think that this is a way to address this question, and this slide shows how the folding rate, folding time, scales with length of a chain for various models. And it turns out that in all cases that were looked at, and in all cases we looked at temperature corresponding to the fastest folding. It's a very important comment here. So this is the folding rate at temperatures corresponding to fastest folding. So that for random sequences, we could not go very far in random sequences, but for random sequences, that scales approximately like n to the power of 6.5, the folding rate with length, scales extremely steep. For design sequences, it scales like n to the 3.2. This is the design sequences, and this is another design sequences, but another potential which delivers slightly worse gaps or slightly worse discourse. So this is a better, more 20 letter potential than this one, and that delivers better scaling with length. And this is a Go model, which is 2.7, which is infinite number of letters limit, where you have just perfect interactions only, and that scales like 2.7 with length. Mm-hmm.
So this is mean first passage time.
Right.
Is the protein stable under these temperatures?
Of course, these guys are unstable and these guys are stable. Random are unstable and designed are stable. And Go is, of course, very extremely stable. Mm-hmm. It separately depends for each type classes of sequences, because as I said, for random sequences, the fastest folding occurs above transition temperature, so it's unstable in the ground state. For selected, for design sequences, the fastest folding occurs below transition temperature, and so it is stable at the conditions of fastest folding. And for Go, it's extremely stable at the condition. What? This is 3.2. Probably, yeah. But the length here is up to 125. So I don't think that we're beyond NC somehow. I don't think that reputation could develop. But you don't know NC for the lattice, so. Yeah.
Does it determine the structure?
Well, it does not to a great extent. So what is here, this is average over five structures. So for each length, random structures, yeah, for each length we took five structures and calculated mean first passage time for each structure, and the dispersion is not huge. It's about an order of magnitude in rate, no more than 400 units, about an order of magnitude dispersion from structure to structure. So it's for five structures, each point for five structures. The absolute values, yes, but the relations, no. The scaling would not depend on that. I don't think it will depend. We played with that. Viktor Apkevich, who worked in the group a few years ago, he played with various non-local moves, and it doesn't change very much, because most of them, when it gets compact, most of them get rejected because it bumps into another part. So basically, it moves through mostly through a set of local moves. Okay. Okay. Now let me. Want a break?
I don't know.
Well, I finished with simple models, and I'll talk about two more detailed models. About half an hour. Yes, about half an hour. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, about half an hour is fine. Okay, so let me continue if you will. So now for a while we were debating these issues about lattice models, but now I want to say that lattice models have their pretty severe limitations, and this is one of them, this is another of them, and of course kind of real experiments are done with real proteins, and if you want to be close to experiment you have to be good, and this is also probably an important reason that you have to consider something else. Yeah. So NIH gets stuff with that, so you have to go further and to address some issues which kind of are more related to real proteins, and but of course you have to address them asking right questions as usual, and those are the questions that I call chemical, and they relate to details of interactions in proteins that deliver their unique properties, and this is the question number one. And very important question which is related to the feasibility of any simulation is whether this kind of solvent, and there are many people who ask questions, how did you take solvent into account? And the answer to this question is not that obvious, whether you can or cannot implicitly treat solvent in order to get some insight or in order to get predictive about what you are doing. It's a question mark. Now then, it's kind of a similar question is whether one can find some good energy function that would realistically describe these interactions, and again, which will be kind of classical and handleable. And also another question is about kinetics, and the question is that one can get something kind of microscopic views about protein folding, and that again trying to keep pace with experiment which is becoming more and more microscopic and more detailed, more and more to the very point of microscopic details of a structure, and one can again in simulations will probably want to be somewhat, and then of course it's much more of a science fiction issue is related to this genomics things and whether one can understand the function from structure, and if yes, at what scale and level of detail. This is of course something that I completely will not tackle absolutely. So that means that one has to go to a little bit more realistic structural detail and do simulations at this level, and this is what people are doing, and this is kind of a pretty fast reference to other work, and this is the landmark work by Duan and Coleman, who ran molecular dynamic simulations on a huge Cray supercomputer and for a very small protein, and the result was with Zimmer force field that basically this is 1 microsecond, it's a misprint, microsecond trajectory that resulted in an intermediate with very low resolution and no resolution at all. So one still, even at a realistic level of details, I guess the point is that one still has to go to some simplifications, which is pretty obvious. And
just a comment.
Yeah.
Vijay Pandey and Bob Felder did it using screensaver approach.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that.
So, I mean, in fact, I think this is out of date.
No, I think that he didn't, I mean, I know this work. I disagree with somewhat, yeah. I somewhat disagree with this assessment of, yeah, no. Yeah. No, explicit. In Coleman, explicit with water. In Coleman stuff, explicit. Yeah. Yeah. So, I suggest not to discuss the work that is not presented and is not published, because, I mean, I'm aware of this work and I have questions about it. So now let me continue, because I have something else to say. And so now at this point I want to justify the approach that many people take in treating potentials, and of course it's a very important question, but the first question is try to separate between potential issue, how you find the proper and the correct potential for protein folding, from attempts to incite some dynamic mechanism, and there is a very well-known prescription how to do it that goes back to Nabura-Ghosh, late 60s, and to deliver a potential, to design a potential that is extremely simple-minded but is very nice, where the kind of it's the simplest potential that guarantees that native structure is a global energy minimum, so that you assign attractive interactions to only contacts that were native neighbors and zero repulsive otherwise. So of course you have to know the native state in order to design Go potential. It's the severest limitation. You cannot use it for structure prediction, but probably you can run dynamics with Go potential. And what is the hope that this dynamics is will give us any meaningful insights? And the hope is that, which again has to be justified by the results and by the analysis, but the hope is that, which emerged from a number of studies, that the sequences, the actual energetics that delivers the stabilization of the native state is not as important as the properties of the native state itself. So that you can see many sequences, very different sequences that fall to the same native structure, which have pretty similar folding mechanism. And that's very well seen in lattice simulation, so that you can do in this design studies that I said, you design hundreds and hundreds of sequences. You study folding, maybe not hundreds, but maybe 50 or so of them. You determine the folding nucleus. One sec. And then you see that the folding nucleus is more or less the same. Yes? Oh, of course, absolutely compatible, because any sequence that delivers the same energy gap will have the same. Of course, you need to have, but you have many, many sequences that have. The point is that for a given structure, you can design, and I showed it before, and I emphasized it, you can design hundreds of sequences that have the same energy gap for this structure. By energy gap, I mean every. No, I mean, it depends on the question that you're asking. At this point, I'm sorry, I switched a little bit. I'm asking a much more detailed question, not what is the folding rate for this sequence. I'm asking the question, what is the structure of the transition state for this sequence? And that, given that sequences deliver large gap, that, I mean, the belief is that is determined mostly by topology, the location of the critical residues that deliver this kind of folding that bring it to the folded state, the structure of the transition state ensemble. So that's my point here, that the structure of the transition state ensemble is more dependent on the topology, on the structure of the native state, rather than individual sequences that fold into this structure. Yes? Yeah, sure. Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. Of course, I made this caveat from the very beginning. It's not a direct correlation. You cannot predict exactly the rate from the energy gap. There is a number of other factors. No question about it. But the point is that it is more like of a necessary condition. You have to have the energy gap. If you do work with random sequences, you fail, and you have to develop an energy gap, and then you will fall into some ballpark of folding rates, which you then can consider in greater detail, depending on some more detail, like what you know, contact order or whatever. So there are some more details, but you have, in order to fall into ballpark solving Leventhal paradox at a reasonable size and so on, you have to have energy gap. That's the point. And yeah.
Experimentally, there are really a very large variety of different folding mechanisms. I mean, you pick out one that has a different time.
Yes, of course, because that's what, well, what do you mean specifically? No, CI2 has, according to first, CI2 has a pretty well-defined folding nucleus. No, that's complete misinterpretation. First draws his folding nucleus in did you see his 95 GMB, where he presents?
In more recent papers, he's now got a much more spread out.
No, there is a quite a few, there are quite a few well-defined residues there that have phi values greater than 0.5, and then the rest is pretty much spread. No, I disagree with that. No. We can look at it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there are examples, some. Yeah. Which paper do you mean? No, I don't think so. So at least there are some, again, of course, as always in biology, there are exceptions, but at least there are some cases when one can at least hope that, and again, it's kind of a matter of hope that this Go potential may work. So now, with kind of having some idea what kind of potential we can do, then the next step is to set up the dynamics, and one example of this kind of analysis, which is kind of handable using normal computers, is what is called discrete molecular dynamics, and this has been around in polymer literature for about 40 years or so. It was done by Rappaport and other people in various polymeric simulations. It was more recently, it was adopted by BU group, Gene Stanley and co-workers with whom we are collaborating, and by Zhou and Carlos for protein Go model simulations. And the idea is that you do, instead of solving the Newton equation, you solve the conservation of momentum and energy at each collision, and that allows you to be a little bit more kind of computationally efficient, and it doesn't calculate forces, so you can use stepwise potential, which is again really is a simplification. So the model which we looked at is a SH3, for which the transition state was well defined from experimental phi value analysis, and it is off lattice model with constraints imposed on C alpha, and also it has C beta atoms, and with C beta atoms there are also constraints that restrict the motion of C beta with respect to its consecutive and preceding C alpha, so that the geometry of a chain is rigid enough to be realistic enough, so that you can fit in terms of entropy, the entropically it is very close to what you would expect from Ramachandran plots in real proteins. So it is C alpha, C beta representation, and stiffness, as I said, is maintained by extra constraints between preceding and subsequent monomers. And so this is very, very important. Square potential. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it is square well. Yeah, absolutely, it's square well. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when two guys are in contact in the native state, there is square well attraction between them at some length scale. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the constraints are also enforced with some square well potentials. So now how this works thermodynamically, and it works okay, in a sense that it has a sharp transition, a folding unfolding transition with temperature, and this is the typical folding trajectory with about it folds in about million time units, and the transition is very cooperative. As you can see, this is the histogram of the distribution of energies, and it has a pretty pronounced peak around kind of folded basis of basin of attraction. It has a pretty pronounced peak around unfolded basin of attraction and minimum in between, so that states with this energy, with intermediate energy, appear much less frequently than either folded or unfolded. And this is a kind of manifest also in this cooperative temperature dependence, and this is heat capacity. No, it's a Go potential. So everything which was native, so if there was a native hydrogen bond, it's included in the Go potential. No, energy, the depth is fixed. You run at different, at various temperatures. This is close to the transition temperature. These histograms are taken. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a canonical. So of course you tune energy of the ghost particles, and that gives you the temperature of the ensemble. Yeah, of course. I didn't understand.
Even for that time, for example.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Of course, because the temperature, but because this simulation is close to the transition temperature. If you go to this temperature, you will stay in the folded state. Of course. Yeah. Because we wanted really to observe many folding and unfolding events in order to study what happens in the transition state. And that's why all simulations are run close to the transition temperature to see many switches from folded to unfolded state and back. So now what we want really to understand is what happens at the top of the barrier between unfolded and folded state. And we want to characterize kind of what kind of contact structures, whatever, how can we understand the transition, this sharp transition between folded and unfolded state, because we know that from this simulation, it is quite clear that it goes, stays for some while in an unfolded state, but then it suddenly jumps to the folded state, and the question is what happens at the moment of this jump? Why this moment at which it jumps to the folded state is so special? What drove it very rapidly to the folded state? And the problem is that you cannot answer this question from just sampling this along any reaction coordinate, because we do not know any reaction coordinate. We do not know any function of conformation that can predict you the folding, how the folding will proceed from unfolded state to the folded state. And the way how to determine transition state ensemble directly from kinetic is to try to evaluate what we called the property that is called p-fold, that for each conformation you can define a kinetic signature that is called p-fold. And this p-fold I will explain in the next slide what p-fold means. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I can answer this question, because if you want to do some experiments, for example, like if you want to make mutations that would change folding rate, for example, then you should care about transition state ensemble. If you want to understand how protein folds and why does it efficiently solve the Leventhal paradox or whatever you call the word, is a question how it reaches this transition state, because after the transition state is reached, it goes down very fast. So the whole story is how protein reached transition state. After the transition state is reached, all the rest is no problem in a sense.
I mean, from some perspective, you might argue that the biological selection could have taken place by the stability
or
kinetics.
Sure.
In either event, I think that the measure of the stability breaks.
Right.
For which I don't have to know anything at all.
No, for the rates, no. For the rates, you need to know the transition state. Let's assume that you are good and you want to select your proteins by rates. Then the knowledge of transition state in this case would be very helpful, because if you know that something fishy happens in the transition state, you will enforce what is going on in the transition state by your mutations. You will put some... Exactly, but this selection will result in enforcing in putting down the transition in the state in energy. Yeah, but you can see it in some aspects of evolution. Well, I mean, the question is why do I worry? Is I don't know how to answer this question. Why should we worry about protein folding in the first place? I mean, it's somewhat. No, by mutations, by five-value analysis, why?
Well, I think a lot of people would, it's clean in some sense, not as clean in some other sense. But I was just wondering, what are your perspective on this?
No, but my perspective is the following, that if there is something specific happening in the transition state, if you can characterize transition state somehow structurally, then it will have some implications on evolution in terms of folding rates. If this is not the case, probably you shouldn't worry about that. So if it's much more kind of diffuse and so on. On a curiosity, I would be very interested to understand why just it suddenly jumps to the native state. What happens when it approaches this transition state in terms of dynamics on the landscape? How it happens kind of dynamically that it approaches some subset of states and then instantly jumps to the native state? So I would worry about that as well. So to me, it's an important question. But of course, it's a matter of year. Of course, I will next slide, I will give you the definition of the transition state. Absolutely. So what is the definition of the transition state? Transition state is operationally ensemble is defined. It's just joke. No. That's impossible. No. So now just let me go to science, Andrei. Let me go to science. So the definition of that's the answer why I say that. That's the answer to this question. Now the definition of the transition state is the following. You take a conformation and you run, say, 1,000 Monte Carlo, whatever dynamic runs from starting from this conformation. And you ask how many times out of this 1,000 runs it ended directly to the native state, just landed to the native state, and how many times out of this 1,000 runs it landed in the unfolded state without reaching the native state. So it's a transmission coefficient. Speaking in kinetic terms, it's a transmission coefficient. So the set of states that have transmission coefficient P equals to 1/2 is a transition state ensemble. So the manifold of states with transmission coefficient 1/2 is a transition state ensemble. So that's the definition. Now the answer to Henri's question, why I claim that. The point is that there is no, almost basically no relation between this property. No. You ask about first passage time. The first time that you hit the state with Q equals to 1, the native state, prior to unfolding. And vice versa. So you're asking that in absolute terms. The first passage time of native state before hitting the unfolded state. And you can define it.
If you wait long enough, you may unfold.
Yeah, but then of course that's exactly what I mean. Before hitting the unfolded state. It's first passage time prior to unfolding. And I will show that the trajectories that clearly show what I mean. That's it. Forget it. That means that this run. Yeah, you stop.
How do you define
In this case, it's by Q, the parameter Q, which is the number of native contacts. So if it is less than 0.1 in this simulation, no, you start with a particular conformation. P fold is determined is a signature of any conformation. To each conformation, you can assign this transmission coefficient. This is a property of a conformation. You start from this conformation. No, of course, it will not. You will see, but because it goes monotonically here and there, it doesn't overcome any barrier when you choose the proper states. It will definitely not depend on. Yeah, but that's in a sense meaningful, because if you have this conformation with Q less than 0.1, it definitely will belong to unfolded state ensemble. You will never find a state with Q less than 0.1, at least I've never found, which will immediately fold. Again, in this case, in less than 1% of the total folding time. And operationalistically, in all the simulations, the criterion is that it folds in less than 1% of total folding time. In this case, in the case that I will show, it will fold in 10 to the minus 3 of the total folding time. Yes. Yeah. Sure. No, I don't know. That's how I try to characterize the pathway. I don't know the pathway, but I try to sample the configurational space kinetically. Yeah, I don't know how the pathway looks like, and I don't want to make any conjectures about pathway before seeing something like that. Yeah, and that's the answer to this question from lattice simulation. In this case, it's a lattice simulation, and the point is that there is basically no correlation whatsoever between the equilibrium sampling, the number of native contacts, the structural overall proximity to the native state, and this p-fold, the kinetic transmission coefficient. So basically Q is not a good predictor of kinetic transmission coefficient. This is for 27-mer Go model, yeah. But sequence models are even much worse than Go model in this regard, because you have a lot of traps then and this stuff. It's much worse.
If it doesn't, you have to
Yeah. If it unfolds, if it reaches this, say for this case, if it reaches Q.1, you cut it. You say that this is unfolding, unfolded run. That in this run it unfolded. By reaches, I don't understand what you're asking. I mean, you follow a parameter, parameter Q. At each step, you calculate parameter Q. Point one. You calculate parameter Q at each step, and you write an operator in C. If Q is less than 0.1, stop. N equals to N plus 1, stop. And try again. That's. No. If it's first passage time, if it reaches it, I stop. This run is over. I start another run. So I try to collect statistics over many, many runs of how many times it reached this and how many times it reached that. Yeah, in a sense, conceptually, yes. Yeah, first passage time to something from which there is no hope to fall back fast. I mean, too different. Yeah. Okay, so now how you probe, how would you probe these transition states? How would you fish for those transition states? And the idea is the following. When you look at the folding run, just equilibrium folding simulations, you see something like that. This, for example, RMS versus time. So you have some events that go from folded state. They locally unfold, but then immediately jump back. So you have some events that just unfold and rapidly fold back, unfold and rapidly fold back. And then you have events that go from unfolded state, fold, but they cannot complete folding, and they rapidly unfold. So basically, you look at these kinetic events that reach the energies corresponding to the transition region, and you get events that called UU. So this is a partial folding fluctuation that go immediately back to the unfolded state. They cannot complete folding. Then you can look at the events that are called FF, which just you start from folding simulations. I heard you there. You start from folding simulations, and then it instantly unfolds. And then there are events that start from unfolded state, cross the transition state, and go to the folded state, and vice versa. So basically what you do, you collect statistics over...
Transition state.
It is range of energies. Transitions... No, it's not P, I'm sorry. It is region of energies which correspond to the minimum of the histogram. So we record all events, the minimum of the equilibrium histogram of energies. Not all states there. I have to sort out in this region of energies. I want to sort the states that have the nucleus from the states that do not have the nucleus. Because energy does not guarantee you that it has the nucleus. That's why I kinetically probe every state from the range of, from the intermediate range of energies, where I see very rare states. But you cannot calculate P for every conformation. You have to fish for some subset of conformation. It's too many. It's impractical. You cannot do. That's why what you do, you collect a set of putative states at which you want to look. And that's this trick how you select the states. And you select the states that occur at the steepest part of the trajectory. And for them, you study P then. Okay, so this is how it works. And so basically, those are examples of simulations that run from three states that have the same energy, exactly the same energy. And there's 100 simulations for this SH3 domain. And these states are, as I said, FF states, the ones that were obtained from fast unfolding fluctuation, but they rapidly folded back, and they have not yet reached the transition state. UU, they haven't yet reached the transition state from this side, and UF, the ones that traverse the barrier. And so this is the P fold for FF events. You start from states that have energy in between, and all runs return to the folded state. It's kind of, it's a cartoon. It means nothing. It's a cartoon. So it's something which we do not know. But the point is that we collect states from these different events, and now we start to probe their p-fold. We do this exactly what I said. You start from the states and run folding simulations and see where it will results. So you start from the states with energy corresponding to this intermediate energy, and the ones that were obtained as a result of FF, and this is the state which almost always returns back to the folded state. This is the same from UU. Again, this, you start from the same energy, it always unfolds. So this is the probability of unfolding, it's p-fold. This is the probability of folding. And this is the p-fold 1/2. So when you start from this state, 50% of the time, it very rapidly folds to the native state, and 50% of the runs, it very rapidly folds. Note the scale here, it's 5,000 steps, and in fact, it's much less than that. The folding rate was 1,000,000 steps. So we are talking about time scales of these drops here and here, on the time scales which are 1,000 times less than the total folding time, which means that the most of the folding time is fluctuations here. When it reaches this state, it goes very rapidly down or back, whatever. So the scales here are about 3 orders of magnitude faster than the scales for the whole folding. Where? In the panels? It's energy. It's energy, and when it hits energy of this minus 140, it's a folded state. And when it hits energy of minus 60, it's the same as Q, it's unfolded. It's the same. For the Go model, Q and energy is the same. Oh, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Of course, but subset, it's very important. That not every conformation with a given energy is a transition state conformation. It's a subset. There are some in the same range of energies, you have conformations that rapidly fold, you have conformations that always rapidly unfold, and you have conformations that are on the top of the barrier, that 50-50, fold and unfold. And these guys are transition state ensemble. So we have about 300 such conformations, and I'm sorry, I will skip this. Basically, then from these statistics of these conformations, you can calculate phi values. You can, if you know something about the transition state, you have more or less standard way to calculate phi values, and this is the comparison of experimental with theoretical, and I will show the scatter plot. And so the scatter plot, the correlation is 0.6 with the Baker's data of phi values, which is okay, not that bad, not great, but okay, it's reasonable. Here, and this is obtained from the statistics of transition state ensemble here for SH3. And also this is a technique. Yes, let's go. Yeah. This is, we're trying now to do with sequences, but it's not yet done. And this is kind of a technical slide, which I probably also will omit, and this is the point, can you evaluate the phi values simply by counting the contacts that are observed in the transition state? And the answer is no. If you do simply a naive calculation by looking at your transition state ensemble and calculating phi values from the number of contacts in the transition state, the correlation is 0.27. But if you take into account both energy, entropy in the transition state and all that, then correlations go high. This is just a comparison of experimental color-coded and predicted, and this is some movie which I will skip probably. So if we have, do we have a few more minutes? I will switch a little bit gear and tell you about the last topic. Mm-hmm.
There is a sort of argument about the phi values, the ones around 0.5 or whatever, when this represents states where the contact is made but are not fully formed, in the end state, or whether it represents an ensemble. It seems in this model that you're saying that the phi values, individual phi values, can be explained by the idea of heterogeneity of the time.
I'm not sure. We need to look more detailed in the ensemble. It's more or less new results, and I really didn't have a good look at the transition state ensemble, how heterogeneous, whether there are some members where the contact is fully formed, partly formed. I can't say that now. But I think that since we have a pretty reasonable correlation, non-random correlation with experiment, I think we can infer something about the transition state, including your question, when you will look better the transition state ensemble, we can have some idea what this all means. I simply don't know now.
Because I think the Go potential, there is no such thing as almost formed or partially formed.
Well, in the ensemble, it may be. It may be in the ensemble. Some of them. Well, yeah, but maybe you're right in this potential, maybe. But with energies, it's pairwise. It's pairwise, and of course, excluded volume. Yes. No. Each. Of course, each amino acid can interact with as many as it comes close to. But it's a pairwise Hamiltonian. Of course, it interacts with many. No question about it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is NTS, number of contacts, so that some of them are partly formed. Yeah, absolutely. So now let me also present another work briefly. And this is kind of another simulation technique, which has its advantages and disadvantages. And advantages is that all heavy atoms, unlike the previous one, this simulation is absolutely structurally representative, so all heavy atoms are represented. Only torsional degrees of freedom are moving. Atom-atom potential, again, can be used simplified, and in this case, what I'm talking about is also Go. And solvent is not included. Again, with Go, potential is not needed. So it has some advantages, and of course, it's highly realistic model. Structure-wise, it's extremely realistic. Sequences and structures are possible, and it's very efficient, so you can observe many, many atomistic detail folding events up to one angstrom RMS in using more or less PCs or clusters of PCs. I will explain just in the second slide, you will see. It has caveats, the same caveat as before, and of course, Monte Carlo has been criticized for its kind of dynamic claims, and one has to be very careful calibrating stuff against experiments. And some things can be done, and some comparison with experiment and MD can be done. So I will go model is the next slide. So this is a move set, and move set rotates phi psi and psi angles of side chains, and it chooses every time a move from a Gaussian distribution with mean zero and standard deviation. So with some probability you can have a large move, with some probability you have small move, but it moves all atoms here. Go potential. And it works exactly like anything else. Basically, if two atoms are in contact in structure, you assign them attractive interaction square. Well, if they are not in contact, you either repulsive or zero. It doesn't matter because it changes average interaction here. And it has a hardcore repulsion here. And hardcore, the sizes of hardcores are taken from van der Waals radius of atoms. So the sizes of atoms are completely realistic. The interactions are not. So this is the application of this to protein G folding, small protein with two hairpins and one helix. And this is the study of isolated elements in order to make sure that we do thermodynamics right, so that we do not over-amplify helices or over-stabilize isolated beta hairpins. Otherwise, we completely shift, because we know experimentally how stable hairpin from Billiton, for example, and from simulations like Dave did and other people did in molecular dynamics, we know stabilities of individual hairpins and helices. We can predict them. And so we can adjust the hydrogen bond. It has an extra potential, which is a hydrogen bond potential. And we can adjust this extra, besides the Go potential, the hydrogen bond energy, to make the stabilities of isolated helix and hairpins exactly corresponding to their experimental stability, so that we do not shift it towards more favorable helices or less favorable helices. No, it's not directional. It's between an H and CO. It's distance between an H and CO. The X is the temperature, and this is the degree of formation of hairpin 2, hairpin 1, and helix. And this is the heat capacity. So it's hairpin 1 is very cooperatively folding and is unstable in isolation. Yeah. We know that hairpin 2 is about 40% formed in isolation at room temperature. And hairpin 1 is not formed in isolation at room temperature. That we know. And for about helix, we know from Agadir. We took Agadir prediction about isolated helix. We were running at one in this unit, it's 1.4, I believe, right, somewhere here, it's about 40% stability of this. So this folds. And the results are quite insightful. So basically, it falls in about 2 billion, this Monte Carlo steps. It reaches almost exact native conformation, less than 1 angstrom RMS, and it goes like that. So it starts to fluctuate. It forms kind of fluctuationally hairpin 2, fraying hairpin 2, frame helix, but nothing happens. So it's kind of a set of fluctuations which results in nothing. Up to the point when a complex is formed between helix, this red, and hairpin 1. And then this complex forms an intermediate here, and then it stays for a while. This example is not very characteristic. It's usually formed a little considerably earlier until this green comes together here, this green, and the folding completes. So basically, this complex is getting formed here. This green is getting formed. And so this is an intermediate, which is a formation of beta hairpin and alpha helix complex, so to which hairpin 2 is added later.
And what is stable hairpin here and unstable?
This one is unstable and this one is stable. Unstable comes first, stabilized by helix cooperatively. It cannot get stabilized by itself. So the first thing is it forms stable complex between helix and unstable hairpin. And then this fluctuating hairpin, this green is a fluctuating hairpin, it comes just associates with this complex. In a major here, as I will show, this is a major nucleation event here. No, of course not, because hierarchical will be. You see, the individual helices do not lead to anything else. But when you have only complexes formed, they get stabilized.
This is not hierarchical.
No, not hierarchical. But it has also a minor pathway, which is seen. It's about 100 rads, 100 events, folding events. And minor pathway is just the opposite. Sometimes you form a complex between helix and hairpin 1, and then between helix and hairpin 2, you form a complex, and then hairpin 1 joins them in the last step.
And what is the temperature?
Yeah, this is the same, 1.4. All runs at this 1.4.
What is
this?
Stable?
It's stable. No, it's stable. It corresponds to about 300K compared to the experimental unfolding, because it's stable protein. It unfolds at 350, and so it corresponds to about 300K compared to the folding transition temperature. And it unfolds in this simulation at 1.7737. So this is the ensemble average, and as you can see, everything is more or less gone, more or less exponential dependencies. And this is the slide that shows the energy landscape for this run in various coordinates. One coordinate is the kind of theoretical coordinate, energy versus DRMS, and we have an intermediate state with relatively high population, and this intermediate with this hairpin. We have a transition state region, the part of energy that's seen very rarely, and we have the native state. If we do the same analysis in another coordinate, and this coordinate is experimental coordinate, burial of tryptophan, the intermediate is completely gone. And the reason is that tryptophan sits only in the second hairpin, and therefore the experiment cannot see the formation of the first hairpin. And therefore the landscape is much more smooth and two-state in experimental variables than in theoretical, than in energy. So the last point that I want to make before lunch is that we tried also to do this kind of p-fold analysis, which is extremely tough. We don't have really good ensemble of transition states, but we found a couple of states which have, again, the same energy, the same Q, but this one has P fold equals to zero. When you start from this state, it always drops down and to the unfolded state. And when you start from this state, which corresponds to the contact between this tryptophan and leucine here, then basically with this contact and with this contact coming close, we get the post-transition state conformation, which folds in about always when you start folding from here. It folds into million steps to the native state. So that, which million, of course, is much, much faster than the total folding rate, which is 2 billion steps here. So it's again, at this point, a factor of million faster. And this is the transition state between this intermediate and the native state, where the major mass drop occurs and kind of major folding events occur. So this is the work that, again, that doesn't look very clear the slide, but this is the work that we are doing in collaboration with Eitan, who is here. Now we are trying to switch from Go model to real sequences and real potentials, and the way how we do it, by iteratively upgrading potential. So we start from some random potential, run the simulation. It results, of course, in decoys, in structures with energies much lower than the native state. Upgrade the potential to push the decoys up, run again the simulation, and so on, so on, iteratively figure out the potentials that would stabilize the native state against all decoys. So it's a pretty tough thing, but so far I think we have a potential which is reasonably stable, and it sometimes falls to 4-5 RMS with sequence model, but it's still in progress. And so the people who did all this work over years in the lab are my former postdocs and students, the Vijay and Shura Grossberg. The color code is that blue are people who are not, were not in my lab, were collaborators. DMD simulations, Koli Dokolyan and BU group, and Ola from Monte Carlo, Ida and June. Thank you.
I forgot to mention that we've done some transition state pathway analysis using a method that we developed by Chandler and Elder. And we find evidence for non-native interactions where you get stabilization of tertiary structures before the basic contact.
Yeah.
So there's some, so I think your, your simulations are very dark, however.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. We also found it in latest models, and we even published a paper last year in Nature Structural Biology where we make exactly this point, that you have non-native interactions in the transition state. And I agree that it definitely is a limitation. The Go, when you do Go, yeah, it's definitely. You may still find something for topological reason, maybe not. But in this simulation, I mean, in Monte Carlo, we can't say too much about transition state because we don't have enough computational power. I mean, our cluster is small for that. I mean, we really have to have an order of magnitude more computers to characterize the transition state. That's why I'm saying nothing about transition state. It's only one example that we were able to fish out of nucleating structure, but I really don't know what happens.
Are you saying that you know Peter Wallner's argument?
Right. Sure.
It would be useful, at least for me, to know
what are those circumstances?
What is one, what do you mean by that they're qualitatively wrong? They would argue, I believe, as I understand this correctly, that if you did an optimized sequence, whatever optimized actually means, that the rates that you obtain by computing using two of the coordinates is no more than a factor of the number of two or three away from the current constant.
But
to my mind seems to be inappropriate starting point.
I work do you mean? I disagree with that because the argument in this paper is circular because they derived the microscopic time constant for this diffusive dynamics not from ab initio but from correlation of fluctuations in one well, and then they related it to the full folding time. Since the landscape along the q coordinate is very shallow, then simply by fluctuation dissipation theorem you will have this agreement because the fluctuation rate in the shallow well that reaches q almost 0.5 will be factor of 2 to the fluctuation to q equals to 1 if you don't have very high barrier. That's why what they got is almost trivial on a very shallow landscape because they derived the microscopic time from correlation of QQ correlator in this paper.
That's an earlier work, but in the more recent work, as explained to me by Jerry, they in fact did the computation the way you might want to do the computation. the computer versus sequence of knowing what was the name of the state and starting on
the
state. So that presumes the correct experiment to answer. And then they calculate a Q, the preemptive profile, that's what Q is Q, and then
started from the top of Q?
Well, then at that point, in fact, you can do the fusion dynamics or Cramer's description, and the results apparently compare very well.
No, but that, I mean, I don't know specifically. I have really specifically to look at what you are talking about. Is it published? Because I don't think that they compared rates there. They compared some five values, but maybe we are talking about the different papers, because the one that I looked more or less reasonably carefully with this diffusive dynamic, this one has a circular argument in my view, because simply the fluctuation correlation is related with mean passage time by fluctuation dissipation, analog of fluctuation dissipation theory. What? No, but it's a long, but it's a 27 mer lattice model, and it's very long simulation, which equilibrated quite well. I mean, it's a long equilibrium simulation, which they equilibrated. So I don't see why not. I mean, it's not a real protein stuff, whatever. It's a, what Dave was asking about is lattice model simulation. And for them, it's well equilibrated, well defined simulation. So it should be okay. But Dave, I don't know exactly what you are talking about, so I have to look at it. Maybe. Yeah, about that. Thank you.